roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz here reporting for duty on a Monday. Ready to start off the week, and it is a fight week. We're going to put one fight card to bed as we talk about UFC Fight Night 184. And we'll also start the preview, UFC 258. Don't forget, Goz and I are going to be hosting a watch-along here on Sportscaster Saturday, February 13th, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific. That's what we're supposed to officially say. But we're going to dip in early because it's just fun to do. It means more fights, more hanging out with you guys, more chatting, more laughter, everything. More making money, too. I had a pretty decent weekend. Betting the fight. So I can't wait for that. And there'll be constant reminders on our social media. I'm at MMA Junkie George. Goz is at the Goz on Twitter and Instagram. Constant reminders so you guys can join us again on Saturday for our UFC 258 watch along. So on today's show, we will recap the event headlined by Alexander Volkov and Alistair Overeem. And we'll preview the event headlined by Kamaru Usman and Gilbert Burns. Kind of sandwiched in between here. On two really, really good shows with a lot of high-profile athletes, a lot of ranked athletes, so it's going to be a fun time. No guests today. We had three on Thursday. We caught up, you know, so we want to breathe a little bit and talk. Talk about the Super Bowl as well. Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tom Brady's won seven. That's more than any other franchise. That's pretty damn amazing. All right, buckle up, folks. It's MMA Junkie Radio on February 8th, Monday.
Hola amigos, Danny Segura dropping in. Just wanted to let you know about MMA Junkie's latest podcast. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language show dedicated to all things professional fighting. Each Monday, we recap the major events from the weekend, plus we analyze the week's biggest news. We also bring you exclusive interviews with the best fighters, coaches, and experts in the Hispanic and Latin American scene. You can find Hablemos MMA every Monday morning on your favorite podcasting platform. Suscríbete y nos hablamos pronto. Chao.
Folks, first of all, apologies for that late start. We had some staticky sound. I don't know what was going on, but here we are. It was only a minute, so hopefully nobody abandoned ship. But we'll be with you here for the next hour, probably even make up for that minute or two that we were gone. Let's get it out of the way, Goz, real fast. Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defeated the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. It wasn't even close. You know, the last game of the year, you kind of want something, I mean, a shootout or even 17-14, I'll take either one, but you kind of want some, some for it to be compelling, you know, for you to be on the edge of your seat, whether it means it's your team that's involved or a bet that's about to cash. We kind of had none of that because Kansas City just never struck with that high-powered offense, and Tampa Bay just kept adding points, and the clock just kept going away, and next thing you know, Tom Brady's holding up a seventh Lombardi trophy.
Yeah, it wasn't that much of a competitive game, but I had a – well, everybody, but there was a run that I remember where the joke would be thrown around, hey, what time is the Super Bowl? Because for a long time, the NFC was just clowning the AFC. So we had a string of about probably seven just these types of games where it was just kind of boring. And then we went on a run where, man, it was super competitive. It was really, really fun.
Right.
But yeah, this is one of those super bores. And the Chiefs just never really had an answer for anything. For as much as people talk about Tom Brady and what the players did on the field, how about the coaching? It just seems like the coaching really, really stood out. They were just they gave them no opportunities to get back into that game. It was pretty damn amazing.
Yeah, I as you were talking, I started immediately going back, see if I could find them really quick. So last year, even though KC won by 11 over the Niners had like a, I think it was a 6-point lead, 10-point lead with 6 minutes left or 8 minutes left. And then KC rattled off 3 touchdowns. So it was pretty interesting till the last quarter, or the last half of the fourth quarter. The year before that was a super bore. It was New England had 13 and the Rams had 3. Come on.
But you're still in striking distance, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But, like, neither KC this year or the Rams 2 years ago even scored a TD. Like, come on, you know? Like, seriously, a TD. 41-33 was the Philly-New England game. That was interesting. I remember the Eagles kept going for it on fourth. And they had Foles as their quarterback instead of Wentz. The year before that was 34-28 with New England beating Atlanta. That's when Atlanta was up, I think, 28-3 or 28-7. And New England came storming back. Denver beat Carolina 24-10 a few years ago. So, yeah, I don't know. This one just sucked. I have nothing against Brady. What he did was amazing. I mean, Bill Belichick's – I've seen a lot of those memes where he's just sitting there like Bernie Sanders, just kind of watching the game, you know, with his arms folded. What can you do? This one proved that Brady, I guess, was the main cog over there in New England, not Belichick. Not to say Belichick wasn't an important part. So Brady was the engine and the other guy was the transmission or whatever, but at least for now. I think anybody that's a Brady supporter can actually say that. And if you're a Belichick supporter, you just got to take that one on the chin.
What do you think of the halftime show? I saw a lot of people hating on it. I didn't think it was that bad.
That guy probably had his hands tied, you know, like you can't, because of the social distancing, you probably just didn't have all the resources available to you. You know, a lot of times singers get backed up. I don't know. I just thought it was okay. It was okay for me.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of middle of the pack. It wasn't anything that was going to stand out and make you go, oh, my God, did you guys see that? But it wasn't bad.
On a normal year, on a scale of 1 to 10, it was about a 6. Mm-hmm. But in a COVID year, I'll give him an 8.
I agree.
Yeah. The Weeknd. All right. So there you have it, folks. Congrats to Tampa Bay. I think that's the second one ever. And KC, look, you had a chance to go back-to-back. That one's got to be tough. You guys just didn't show up, man. Whatever. You got Pat Mahomes for the next 10 years. He's still pretty good, although he didn't play a great game. All right, MMA, and we only do this for the Super Bowl, I think, unless one of our teams wins it. So, UFC 184, Fight Night 184, Alexander Volkov defeated. Alistair Overeem goes, kind of had his way with him. I don't remember too many Alistair moments.
Now, if you're a casual fan or just a new fan and they told you to tune in, you might actually say, what is that guy doing in the cage with that guy? Like, they just look like they're worlds apart. You know, people always talk about that one fight where you feel like a fighter just aged overnight. I don't know what to say about this performance from Overeem, because it didn't look like Alistair Overeem at all. You know, I know he's gotten older and all that, but this last run that he's been on, he's been competitive in the fights. Like, he's kind of shown old flashes of who he was before, and now in this fight it just seemed like he didn't want to be there, almost like he was confused. I don't know what the hell was going on in this fight for him, but it was not a good look for him at all.
I think because it was a 5-round fight, he was just letting the fight unfold. He's got that boxing high guard, you know, where he feels like, this will get me out of trouble until I'm ready to unleash and find my spots. But he just didn't really do too much. And Alexander Volkov, who actually wasn't that impressive at times either, was just methodically, when he was throwing, he was landing. But when he landed, he made it count. He apparently broke Alistair's nose in round one. So round two was just a matter of time, honestly. But, you know, they are both technicians. They both are tacticians. So I don't think Rock'em Sock'em was ever going to come into play. especially with Volkov. You know, he's a big cat, so he's not like fleet of foot. He's not just going to be dancing and doing the Ollie shuffle. But when he does put some hands on you, he's, you know, it'll have some damage. Reminds me a little bit of kind of how Vladimir Klitschko used to box. It wasn't the most exciting, but it was pretty damn effective. I know it's a big win for him. Congrats to him. 4-2 in his last 36 months. He wants a title shot, but I looked at it. We obviously know that the fight that's already set is Stipe Miocic versus Francis Ngannou. It's coming up here in March. And I imagine, though he's been kind of quiet, that John Jones has next. But then after that, the UFC's worst nightmare might be Blades and Ngannou Part 3. So if Ngannou wins and then he beats Jones, so if he, you know, this is me jumping way ahead. But the only reason I'm doing it was to give you guys an idea of, well, what else is ahead of Volkov? But Blades is ahead of Volkov. He's behind Ngannou. He needs Ngannou to lose. But if they're going to do a Part 3, I guess Blades is starting to do his job, you know, which is to eliminate everybody else. But then you also got Derek Lewis, who gave Alexander Volkov a loss a few years ago. And that loss was key. If not for that loss, then I think Volkov is right behind Blades. But because of that loss, I think maybe even Lewis and Jarzinho could plead a case. You know, I think they'll be still ahead of Volkov. And Volkov, unfortunately, will have to take another fight. It's okay to plead your case. I don't think there's a problem with that. You start to get the wheels in motion, let it marinate, maybe, you know. But, bless you, Mom. But, you know, what can you do? He just did what he was supposed to do, and that's just call for what he wants next. He wants a title shot. I just don't think he's going to get it. Now, what about, do you think he should get it? I mean, no, right?
No, he shouldn't. It was a great performance, but a lot of the great performance came because Alistair Overeem gave it to him. The oddest thing about that fight for me, I know he's done it in other fights, but Alistair Overeem was okay covering up and giving him free shots. And in MMA, you should never do that. I understand why in boxing you can do it. But in MMA, you should never give your opponent free shots. You should never make them comfortable enough to come in and just unload the way Volkov was doing. And some of those slipped through and hurt him. And because of that, it was tougher for Overeem to get back into the fight. They were Volkov was a guy that uses his length, his size, and it was just the perfect game plan. But on top of that, Overeem was giving him everything. So yeah, it's a great performance, and I understand why people are saying, hey, this guy should be up there. But logistically, it probably doesn't make sense. And I don't even know that really Ngannou and Stipe 3 would be a bad thing. I think it'd be a great thing.
Well, the only problem is we already had Miocic. He just finished a trilogy with Cormier. And the problem is I think each fight took at least a year in between. It's a real holdup to the division. And I know some of it was because of injury, but still, like, I'm ready for a champ to defend 3 times in 1 year. Or 5 times in 2 years, you know, where you can maybe get 2 in 1 year and 3 in the other. If things line up right, like if you're on a January card, then there's no reason why you can't fight in June and December as well. But, man, you know, I was proud of him speaking English, pleading his case. Overeem, though, I think he wanted to eventually get to that wrestling and kind of mix it up, kind of like, hey, I'm the more well-rounded guy here. But like you said, in the heavyweight division, anything can change, you know, the direction of the fight. A stiff jab, you know, can maybe wake you up a little bit. A good kick to the calf. So you got to test your patience while also exhibiting a little bit of aggression, you know, like limited aggression, efficient aggression. I don't know. But Overeem is very marketable. He did win. He did have a win streak going into this fight. Doesn't sound like he's done. So if he can just pick someone off in the next fight, actually someone that might be more difficult than Volkov, then he's right back in the mix. But this one's going to sting him because Volkov will stay ahead of him in the pecking order, the same way that Ngannou stays in front of Blades in that pecking order and so on, you know. It's the head-to-head loss really can be costly. Even Lewis ahead of Volkov, that one's going to sting. For him, Blades versus almost everybody. Blades seems to have a win over everybody except for Francis Ngannou. Well, I'm sure there's a few others, but he's got some meaningful matchups there that have come into play. So, congrats to Volkov, and I think Reem will be back. He gets paid good money. He didn't get KO'd, like, brutally. Congrats to Jason Herzog. Props to Jason Herzog, I should say. It's not like he won a contest. Props to him. He did a great job, I think, in recognizing that there was already damage inflicted to Overeem from round one that carried over into round two, so he's watching him. And once Volkov actually put Reem down, Volkov, I think, was going to start stepping to him, you know, and probably administering the finishing touches. And then Jason just gave him a push, like, get out of here, you know. Yeah. Pushed him away. That was that. And we move on.
Yeah. I think overall it's going to be a good thing, but he's got to rest over him. If it's up to me, I say that's it. You got to stop doing this. He doesn't strike me as a guy that needs money. I think he's made some pretty good paychecks throughout the years, even before the UFC. So I have to imagine he's got some money, but at some point you got to protect that brain. And even though he wasn't knocked out clean, his brain was still rattled. And that's just not good. He can't come back and keep doing it. This is the heavyweight division, for crying out loud. And even back earlier in his career, light heavyweight, he'd been KO'd there too.
If he saved well and didn't lead an exorbitant lifestyle, then I think he should be all right. Because I think he's probably averaged $1 million at least in the last 10 years, you know. Probably gets paid like $300,000, $500,000, maybe a little bit more on the title fight. Maybe I should even go back 15 years with Pride, you know, when you went home with a briefcase. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. We'll see, you know, and then I guess any type of endorsements, you know, I don't know how popular he is in Holland, but those years that he fought maybe twice or three times, maybe a discretionary bonus. I'm throwing everything out there so that you all can reason like, okay, George isn't crazy. About $1 million a year might sound right for the last 15 years, hopefully more. What was he able to keep with foreign taxes and management fees? And then again, you know, like just to keep up your profile, you got three whips in the garage, you know, you got a beautiful lavish home over the Mediterranean, or are you just living comfortably? Who knows? I only say this not to rain on Alistair's parade, because if he is ready to retire, I don't think Goes is crazy to say, man, hang it up. But these, you know, I've seen NBA players, NFL players, and Major League Baseball players, honestly, sign big contracts, some of them even guaranteed, and then come up on empty, bankrupt. I just think back to that, man. I don't know.
I think even if he did live not so much a lavish lifestyle, but, you know, a Ferrari here and there, I think he'd still be good. I mean, think about it, like the Brock payday was probably pretty decent, pretty damn decent. And then just, you're right, I think he probably does average close to about $1 million when it's all said and done.
And I remember this is one guy, Goes, who I actually got to see his payday. You know why? Because I had to go to the courts here in Las Vegas. It had to do for a lawsuit. Steven Morocco, our ex-colleague here at MMA Junkie, was working on a story, and he asked me to go down to the courts to pick up, I guess, a filing. I don't know those legal terms, but it was something that was available to the general public, kind of like how salaries used to be. So I went down there, and I said, hi, I'm George with MMA Junkie, and you've been in contact with Steven Morocco, and I'm supposed to pick this up, and okay, so when they handed it to me, I think I either had Steven on the phone, or as soon as I got to the lobby, I called Steven. I go, all right, bro, I got that. Okay, can you look at it? Does it say this? Because I think he actually just needed that to get the story going. And then I was going to either fax it to him or or send it to him. But I looked, and he had a pay-per-view cut. Yeah, I mean, he does pretty well. So it's just a matter of how many years did he fight multiple times, and then how much was he able to keep because of taxes. We always forget about taxes. You get paid $1 million, I think you keep 650 if you do your expenses right and you pay your fair share. But he's an international fighter too. Then again, he's been living in Florida, so I don't know. You know, like that, we're spending too much time. You have any final thoughts on Volkov and Overeem before we get to Sanhagen and the beautiful KO over Frankie Edgar?
Let's get to that because some of that talk's going to be almost the same on that as well.
Corey Sanhagen delivered a beautiful knee. I mean, seconds into the first round. If not for Jorge Masvidal, he might hold the record for the quickest KO via knee. Man, he was just moving left to right and left to right, you know. I want to think, was the setup from the minute they said, let's fight? Or was it something that just came to him at that time? I don't know. But, man, was it a thing of beauty. He literally just went up right as Frankie was ducking down a little bit and clocked him. I mean, not only was the KO just instant, the actual connection of the KO was a thing of beauty. And then Frankie had this horrible fall head first where you're like, oh, it was two. Oh, no. It was like, oh, and then, oh, look at that. You don't want to see that to anybody. But the fighters that have done this the longest, the ones that have earned our respect, the ones that have accomplished so much, the ones that this just doesn't happen to, those just have like that little special extra touch of care, like, oh, I hope he's okay, you know, because you know that they are starting to come down to the end of their career. You know they could maybe walk away if by winning a title and say, that's it, I'm out of here, you know, a la Henry Cejudo, that was a title defense, or Habib, or, you know, you don't want him to stay one fight too late, and man, he just did not look good. You know, he shook his hand, you know, he wanted to get the hell out of Dodge. I don't know what was going through his head, but that was a clean KO. It was a beautiful KO. That's how we describe him here. This is our sport. It's violent. It's nothing against Frankie Edgar. And then I was thinking about Mark Henry, who was right behind Frankie Edgar, what he must be feeling like, because he's done interviews with us. He's one of the top coaches in MMA. He's done interviews with us, but this thing eats him up, man. I can't imagine what he's feeling like. I'm going to probably reach out to him in a few days and just say, how you doing, coach? Because, ooh, that was hard to watch.
Yeah. So the difference for me in boxing and MMA is MMA, they seem to be a little bit more active on Twitter, and the UFC seems to do a lot more of showing the personal side of fighters. So you're used to seeing Frankie Edgar, and like, I know that his son's name Santino, like they give you so much information that makes these guys so personable that when these things happen, you start to think almost like they're your buddy or something. Like you have that same feeling. So when he went out, I wasn't really a combat sports going, oh my God, that was a great kid. I was like, oh my God, is he okay? That was my first reaction. And that you got to give Sanhagen his props because he threw it at the right time. You know, that could be something in film that he saw that when Frankie goes down like that, time that knee and throw it, he hit him flush. It was one of the baddest knockouts I've ever seen in the UFC. And it's definitely something that, again, we're back over to what we were talking about with Alistair Overeem. And I don't know necessarily we got to say, call it a career, but definitely, definitely take some time and figure out what the hell is next, because this really shot him down in rankings. And
no, that one didn't. No, because this
video, you don't think it's going to affect him?
No, I'll tell you right now. I would have thought the same thing, but he's 1-1 as a bantamweight. Mm-hmm. Remember, he brings over his equity from lightweight to feather and feather to lightweight or bantam as a great fighter who's got great quality wins and titles and title defenses. But we do give him a new leash on life. But the one thing he did was he beat number 5, Pedro Munhoz, in his win, and he lost to number 3, Corey Sanhagen, in his loss. So it almost makes sense, like, well, 3-4 and 4-5. The same way Sanhagen, hey, I just beat 4, but he lost to 2 in Aljamain Sterling. And then you look back at Munhoz, and he's 3-3 in his last 36 months. So it's not like you can say, but Munhoz is charging hard, because he's not. He's lost his last 2 fights. He had the Garbrandt KO, but then he lost 2 in a row. So like I was just look, and I'm not trying to be a know-it-all or Jordan Breen back in the day, you know, having all the info there. It's just that I was working on rankings before the show, and I'll finish up rankings when we're done. And I was just on, I'm actually on Pantoja, working on flyweight. But I was like, wow, I think I'm putting it up to the rest of the editors to see if there's something there. But it's the guy right behind him doesn't have a compelling enough case, and he has the head-to-head loss. So it's not like I can even overlook the head-to-head loss by saying, since then, he's won three in a row, and he's finished them all. Like, there's really no case for Munoz. Maybe the ones behind Munoz, but we typically don't start there. We start with, well, what's the guy behind you doing, or what's the guy ahead of you doing? Can you get ahead of him, or can you fall behind? Like Volkov. Volkov can go ahead of Overeem, but he can't go ahead of Jarzinho. Now, some might say, but he was more impressive in his win over Alistair Overeem than Jarzinho was. Yeah, but Jarzinho is 5-1 in the UFC, 8-1, I think, in the last 36 months. Volkov's 4-2 in the last 36 months. So one extra loss. He doesn't have as polished of an overall record. It's kind of confusing, man. But he may actually survive this because of that high-profile win to debut at Bantamweight is what I'm saying.
Well, I'm not necessarily – I don't mean – when I say rankings, I don't really mean the number. What I mean is you got a guy who's fought for a title lots of times. So if he's going to fight for a title again, you really have to sell it, right? Yeah. You really have to put together a good streak to say, hey, not only am I on a streak, but I want you to look past what's happened in the past and give me another shot.
You mean his stock as a contender, right, is what you meant?
I feel like he's way far from that. So On top of that, let's just say he puts together a good three fight win streak. Frankie Edgar's old. Got a lot. I mean, he is, man. And I don't mean that like age-wise. What I mean is his body's been through a lot. He has had a lot of five-round fights. So on top of that, for him to put together that streak, that's minimum a year and a half or something, right?
Here's what Edgar needs to do. Edgar needs to call out Cody Garbrandt, who's number 7, because if he can get past him, A, he's a name. B, I think it'd be fun for both guys. And C, he could go, hey, I beat the two guys behind me. It keeps him right there and relevant. He'd be 2-1. Now, the UFC might go, you got to get one of these guys over, like an O'Malley or somebody like that. They need to get over on the veteran. Sometimes that happens. That happened recently with, I think it was Gane and Dos Santos, you know, where you kind of have to play your role. And that's where the UFC goes, hey, remember when you were a nobody and Verdum fought you? You know what I mean? It's just kind of like this cycle that happens. So if you can be proactive, you know, and defend your spot a little bit, then it might behoove him. But, yes, his championship stock did take a fall. He's 1-1. And he'll either get that up-and-comer who's fresh and gunning for him, or he needs to just mix it up with another veteran. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean,
he needs time off.
That's the thing. You got to add in time off as well. And the wins that he picks up along the way can't just be 30-27. Like, he's got to knock people out or submit people. He's got to really, really make a case to ever get a title fight again.
Right away, I can tell you he needs time off. Though I remember Ortega waxed him, and then he came back and fought pretty quick. So you never know, right? But I would suggest time off. But in a perfect scenario, someone like Garbrandt, it can't be Marias because they used to train together, and they really sound like big brother, little brother. I don't think it could be Aldo because we'd go, again? You guys fought a lot of times. A Sun Sal, perhaps. And now we get into the area of like a Rob Font who's, you know, up and coming, or a Song Yadong who's up and coming, or the rest of the guys. You still got veterans in Cruz and Dillashaw, but they're a little bit further down and they won't help you defend your championship status. But one of the key things he did was he put all his chips in and said, I'm debuting at 35, but don't give me the 15 guy. Don't give me the 10 guy. Give me the 5 guy. And he beat him, and that helped him a ton, man. So we'll see. Because at this point, Sandhagen could be champ at the end of the year. I don't know. So losing to Sandhagen really isn't like the worst thing in the world. But I think right now, more than anything, he just needs time off.
For sure. Yeah,
absolutely. And Sanhagen's got every right to go, I got next. He'll fight the winner of Aljamain Sterling and Peter Yan, with the lone exception if it's a controversial decision or it's a classic. Otherwise, I think he's safe.
Yeah. I think if I'm him, I just stay ready. Because you never know. In the COVID-19 era, and, you know, with Peter Yan, you just never know. So I would just stay ready. Maybe he slips in. Maybe one of them guys falls out or something, and he gets a fight.
Clay Guida defeated Michael Johnson. I think I heard all 30-27s or close to. You know, it's simple, man. If you stand with Johnson, he's got a better chance of taking you out. If you can take him down, you have a pretty good chance of submitting him or winning a decision. It's the most baffling thing out there is Michael Johnson's career, because he's beaten Tony Ferguson, Dustin Poirier, and Edson Barboza. So it's not like you can say, well, come on, you know, what's Michael Johnson? No, he's beaten some good fighters. But he also just loses a lot of key matchups against other guys. So it's a fun fight, you know. I enjoyed it, but it was kind of like how I saw it going. You know, Guida's very, very committed to his science, which is pressure, cardio, wrestling. And he does not care if he did not finish you. He only cares to win. Says he still has, you know, some more gas left in the tank. But he did say, hey, how about an up-and-comer? He actually made it easy for the UFC. Give me an up-and-comer. You know, I'm tired of fighting these veterans. I think his last two were Jim Miller and somebody. But Bobby Green, I think it was Bobby Green and Jim Miller. So now he just got Michael Johnson. So, yeah, so he has fought some OGs. So I think he's saying, hey, I'll make it easy for you. Give me a young cat. Give him, you know what, Fajita, coming off that loss to Dariush. And that's a perfect segue, unless you got thoughts on Green and Guida.
I got a
– Not Green and Guida. Johnson and Guida.
I went back and watched it again, and it sucks because Michael Johnson has this type of talent that when he's on point, he's a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. And I really hope he didn't lose that momentum that he had gained from changing his life around, and he just had this different attitude about fighting that I really think is going to help him. I just think this was a bad matchup. Like, he spent a lot of time fighting Clay Guida off and not really putting together any of his offense. And his offense is a thing of beauty. He's got a really nice jab. He's got a really nice straight right hand. And his footwork is great. But he didn't get a chance to showcase any of that because Clay was just on him, forcing him to play defense the entire fight. It's really a fight he's going to go back and just be frustrated watching. But there aren't that many people that can do that type of game plan that Clay Guida does. I hope Michael doesn't get frustrated. I hope the UFC doesn't let him go. I think I like his attitude change, and I think he said a lot of key things, and I think he's got a lot of skill still. It's not like you can look at this fight and go, oh, but he took a lot of damage. Like, he didn't really take that much damage. So hopefully he can dust himself off and be right back in the mix. And, you know, who's going to get tired of watching Clay Guida? That guy's fun. Match him up about against just about anybody, and I'm in.
Johnson's head coach for that fight was Mike Van Arsdale. You saw him in the corner. They talked about it. They had their camp in Arizona. So he wasn't with Henry Hooft, and he wasn't with what we know as, we call them the Black Zillions, but it's Sanford MMA now. They're a few years removed from all that. And I just don't know how much in the coaching game Mike Van Arsdale has been. I haven't seen him in many corners. But I would have thought that seemed like he was leaving comfort back to comfort. And sometimes I think you just got to, like, really, really get out of your comfort zone and maybe head to a gym where everything's different and they can really, really break you down. But I don't know. Maybe Van Arsdale, who's more of a wrestling guy, was able to do that for him. Maybe that's what he wanted, was a wrestling guy to prepare him for the wrestler. Henry Hooft is a striking guy. But all these teams are very, very fully staffed. You know, Greg Jones is the wrestling guy, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, over there at Sanford MMA. So they have capable wrestlers there. They have teammates that can wrestle. Michael Johnson is a wrestler. Kamaru Usman's around. Well, Kamaru Usman isn't there anymore either. But anyway, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. But I think they'll both stick around. But remember, once you start earning a decent wage over there, once you start getting paid 110 and 110, 90 and 90 or whatever, because he started in 2010 with the UFC, so it's 11 years in. Great wins along the way. Seems pretty easy to get along with. But I remember Dana when he did some of his cuts a few months ago or a year ago, he goes, if you're not competing for a title, then your run might be over here, you know? So I would imagine if you're a veteran and you've lost a few, that's probably got to stress you out a little bit too.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely has. And I mean, in Michael's case, he's got places to go. I think any of the other organizations would embrace him with open arms because he's fun to watch.
Well, Bellator needs lightweights. Yeah. They don't have very many lightweights over there, especially ones that carry a name. Now, PFL, they've just made their announcements. However, I suppose if they just announced 12, you could say, hey, I'm going to be hanging around. Well, I don't even know Michael Johnson's a free agent, honestly. But the thing about PFL is if you don't latch on early, then I suppose you can hang around and see if someone gets hurt and maybe step in. But is that really your role, or do you want something a little bit more secure? Who knows? I think Bellator's a place for lightweights that are free agents because they need them. Bellator is not a place for flyweights that are free agents because they don't have them. Nor do they have women's strawweights, nor do they have women bantamweights. So, you know, in some places there's a strength and some places they're not. I think if you're a high coveted free agent if you're a free agent who's had his run in the UFC, you may want to consider Bellator because they have a nice, fully stocked 205 division there where you can already start getting down. By the way, don't they have some announcements coming up tomorrow? When is Anthony Johnson fighting, for crying out loud?
A big one. I mean, granted, they're always going to say that, but this one seems like it's got a little bit more pep in it. So who knows? I mean, anytime you see something like that, you think Fedor, right? That's a big commodity for them right now. So who knows? Maybe they come up with an idea for him finally.
Alexander Pantoja defeated Manel Cape. Manel Cape came in with a lot of hype. I've heard of him. I've seen him fight in Japan. I think he retired Ian McCall. I think he beat Horiguchi. This was his debut in the UFC. He looks pretty flashy. He looks like he could be fun. He's just not active. Pantoja took it to him.
That was a weird fight, man, because he kept making it look like he wanted to engage. But he didn't engage. He was even doing the all-knee shuffle for a little bit.
Right.
Just trying to entice him. But he wasn't doing anything on his part. And I don't know if that's that type of fight that fighters talk about where they go back and they watch it and they go, man, I can't believe that was happening. I didn't see it that way. It's got to be because
you better. It
made no sense whatsoever. He's going to look at that and be really, really pissed off. And hopefully he comes back in the next fight and changes that. And maybe a little bit of octagon jitters. I don't know what could have led to that.
The judges have a pad and pen in front of them, and if they're taking little notes or if they're mentally doing it, they were set. They were looking. The pan was ready, licked, and ready to go. Okay. Ooh, he's about to do something. You know, am I going to give him a big star or a big check mark, or what am I going to do here? What kind of a note am I going to write? You know, he controlled him. For most, you know, he outstruck. What am I doing here? And as they sat there, they were like, he wasn't doing anything. It reminded me of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, the opening scene when that marketing exec wants to tell the whole table, this is what we're going to do going forward with this marketing plan, I guess. And he gets ready. You know, he kind of cracks his knuckles and he says, and he starts looking again at the blueprints and his notes and everyone else is hanging on his waist. Those were the judges, goes. They were like, what are you going to do? You know, like, because on the Pantoja side, we've done a lot of stuff. You know, he's been hitting you with this and that and kicking you and, you know, he's pressuring you. He came to fight. You didn't come to fight. You know, and I don't know if he was waiting for that perfect time to unload. Here it comes. It just never came.
Yeah, no, it was a really, really weird performance. And anybody that's seen him fight in other organizations, he doesn't really fight like that. So there's not much of an explanation, but he's definitely going to be frustrated going back and watching it. He's got to change that for fight two, because I don't care what kind of hype you have or who you are, nobody's going to want to watch that a second time.
Yeah, I think I either mentioned it to you or maybe I was texting and I said, it is his debut. Could he have like nerves, jitters, you know, like, okay, let me just get through round one. Okay, let me breathe and let me start executing. I don't know, but it never came, you know. In fact, I haven't heard much of the nerves and jitters in the last few years. So I don't know if it's because a lot of people are starting to get a feel for it already through Dana White Contender Series, or maybe it's just not as big of a mystique. Who knows? But I don't know. I was expecting so much more, man. Congrats to Pantoja. He's in a tough spot. I was just working on his ranking, by the way. Not that you asked or anything, but he had actually lost to GCA Formiga Goes about 10, 11 years ago. So as much as I love to respect the head-to-head, I like to respect the more recent head-to-head. They have similar records, you know, tons of wins and a few losses here and there. Great wins and a few losses here and there. But GCA is no longer with the UFC. He's not going to be able to really defend his territory much because whoever he beats, it's not going to be at the caliber of what he fought in the UFC. So I think he's going to sail past Formiga, but he's going to stop right before Askar Askarov. What's his name? Askar. There's two guys. There's Askar Askarov and Askar Askar. Askar Askarov is the flyweight. He defeated Pantoja recently. So he'll stop right behind him, but he'll make a little move. He's talking about, I want to fight Figueroa, but that loss to Askarov hurts. And you still got Marino's rematch. He's going to have to take another fight is my point.
Marino's been here in Vegas. Have you seen?
I haven't seen him. No.
Yeah, he's been over at Extreme Couture.
Oh, good. I can't wait for the rematch. I'm also not in any hurry because they just gave us a great fight on 3 weeks' notice in December. So I'm fine if they told me, fool, they ain't even fighting until June. I'd be like, oh, okay. I just thought I'd ask. But we know they're not on the any of the May cards. Sorry, March cards. So perhaps in April or May. That was a battle. That was a war that they had.
That was a great one.
And that was right after, you know, 3 weeks after they both beat tough guys. Figueredo had beaten Benavidez. Marino fought Brandon Royval. They had a five-round classic. It ended in a draw. They were both lumped up pretty good. They needed some time off. I mean, I thought that was really ballsy on both guys to step in on 3 weeks' notice and do what they did. So they deserved a bonus and some time off. But it's good to hear that he's back in action. Continuing here with the card, Benil Dariush defeated Carlos Diego Fajeda, and Danilo Marquez defeated Mike Rodriguez. That finishes out the main card. Devontae Smith defeated Justin James. Ooh, that was a brutal eye injury. Doctor came in and said, why are you even bringing me in here? You know, I can't let this continue. Carl Rosa defeated Jocelyn Edwards, 30-27 across the board there. Laura Procopio defeated Molly McCann. McCann left her gloves in the octagon. And similar to Dan Hooker, kind of like, I'm not really done. You know, guy, there's more fight left in her. Seung Woo Choi defeated Yusef Zalal. Timur Valiyev defeated Martin Day. That was a four-fight run of decisions that kind of slowed things down a little bit. Ode Osborne had a beautiful stoppage KO over Jerome Rivera. It was like 25 seconds into round one. Yeah, that's what got things started. But I want to circle back to Benil Dariush versus Carlos Diego Fajeda. These are ranked lightweights. Benil was very emotional. He says, man, we shouldn't have even had to fight each other. And remember we were saying that, Goes? We're like, they've already fought. Why are they fighting? There's a plethora of lightweights out there. Benny felt the same way. Why are we fighting? He should have got a better opponent, and so should have I. And that came when they said, who do you want next? Which would have been a perfect time for him to go, give me Gagey or somebody, right? So that we all go, ooh, and then run to Twitter and say, I'd love to see that. He didn't do it. He went on this rant, and then he apologized for it afterwards, which confuses me. I really like Benny, so I don't want to bury him. But, Benny, you're sending mixed signals. You know, if that's what you really felt, then say it. I don't think as you know, Dana White and Joe Silva mostly, but Dana White, Sean Shelby, and now Mick Maynard, they don't strike me as vindictive with something like that. If that's you after every fight, then they're probably like, all right, file this guy under high maintenance or whatever. But Benny's one of the easiest cats to get along with. He was just frustrated. He should have just stuck with it because he really does deserve a high-profile name. We, by the way, asked him, would you ever fight RDA? He says, no, that's my brother. That's my brother from Kings MMA. But I think anyone else out there is probably, you know, a possibility. So that includes Ferguson's, Hooker's, Felder's, Iaquinta's, Lee's. I don't know, but he wants to fight up.
I think Lee, Hooker, those are two good names. They definitely have to be one notch above because he's going to get lost. He's going to become one of these guys that's on an 8-fight win streak, and we're still talking about, well, what's it going to take to get Dariush a title match? Well, it's because of that. So whoever the next guy is, enough's enough. It's got to be that next level fighter for him to get a victory there and then be in consideration to be one of the next guys for a title shot, because you just can't keep winning these like mid-level fights. And, you know, Benil's got good management, but he said it himself. His frustration was fighters look at him as high risk, low reward. And that's true. But at some point you gotta make that move so that you stop becoming that. And this fight right. kind of helped. You know, this fight helped put his name on the map. But boy, if you're a Benil Dariush fan, that fight was really miserable to watch because it was scary. You know, Benil will give you everything he has and he's throwing everything. But boy, his hands are down and you just feel like the right punch, if it connects, that's it. And it's because he tries to give you everything. But he definitely would have to tighten that up for the next level of 155ers.
He didn't really get the striking going as flashy as he usually does because he started to wrestle. And I was concerned that by wrestling, he might exert his gas tank. But Haida has a pretty decent gas tank. Dariush slows down. I'm not saying Dariush is a gasser, but I'm saying he does slow down a little bit. And with that comes a poor defense. But he took some shots. They had some great scrambles. They both attacked the legs. For Haida, attacked the legs more than Dariush, but even Dariush got in a position where he looked like he wanted to. But they had some beautiful scrambles. It was really, really a fun fight to watch. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I took Dariush's point perfectly because I was pushing the same thing. Why are these guys even rematching? It's ridiculous. They don't need the rematch. Dariush at one point was going to fight Charles Oliveira, and look where Oliveira's at right now. The fight fell off. The next thing you know, Oliveira's stepping in to fight Ferguson. And Oliveira might now is a contender to fight Khabib, if Khabib's still around. I can't believe they haven't solved that yet. Or Dustin Poirier, if Khabib is retired. Oliveira's name has actually been mentioned. You know, so that's how close Benny has gotten, man, and that has to be kind of frustrating. Benny's got a 6-fight win streak. Oliveira's got a 8-fight win streak. So maybe it makes sense, but if he could have stopped Oliveira, then – you know, he might have a little bit more stock and a little bit more say, but who knows, man? He's just going to have to fight one of these guys. Khabib is a stablemate. Gaethje's a stablemate. I don't know if maybe that might be his thing. RDA is a teammate. So at some point, he may just have to let go of somebody close to, you know, and just get down. So
that stable has shown, though, that of course, they want to avoid same management, but they've done it. They've done it quite a few times. So they definitely, you could tell they can get over it very quickly, and that shouldn't be an issue. But I understand RDA. Okay, I get that. But yeah, once you start getting into guys that are under the same management and all that, that's going to be a little rough. I like Hooker. I like that name. I think that's a good one. The thing with Ferguson is he's attached to just about anyone. But I think something like that would make sense as well.
Ferguson last week was telling Nate, let's you and I fight. Mm-hmm. Nate is wanting Poirier or McGregor, I guess. McGregor bought himself a new Rolex. I don't know. It's funny how these guys just pop in the news. All right, you know, all this is fun. But it all starts at the top. First, let's solve Habib. Is he retired for real? Which it sounds like he is. Let's give him a gracious exit, a beautiful press release. Maybe he can have some sort of an official announcement in Moscow. It's one hell of a career, you know? What? And then we say, now fighting for the vacant lightweight title is, and we fill in those names. I don't want to hear McGregor versus Poirier 3. I want to hear it at some point, but not for the title. They just fought. It should have been for the title. I want to hear Poirier versus somebody, and it should be either Oliveira or Chandler. And if it's not one of those two, then it just doesn't make sense. And who's trailing? Well, Hooker, Gaethje, and Ferguson are all coming off loss, but they're all contenders. I don't think any of them should fight for the title right away. They both need to, one of them needs to get a win, and then they can maybe do it. McGregor will always be in the running. All he needs is a win, and he'll be in it. Dober's fighting soon against Makhachev. Dariush just won. Lee's injured. Felder, we don't know if he's retired or not. Quinta doesn't fight often. I don't know. I just threw out a lot of names. But it all starts at the top. Let's sort that out first, and then we'll just go from there. As far as Nate Diaz, him and McGregor are anomalies. They should just fight each other and get that over with. But I am warm to Ferguson Diaz. I think I said it in a spinning backlick. I would love some sort of a BMF angle to it. SoCal versus NorCal, you know, because I really want to see Masvidal versus Covington. I don't want to see him BMFing. And yeah, as you can tell, man, it's like this trickle effect to the decisions made by some of the top fighters in the UFC.
I don't know. For me, Nate Diaz is getting very close to Nick Diaz territory, where he can say just about whatever he wants, but we all kind of write it off as that like crazy uncle, or leave him alone. He likes attention, you know, that sort of thing. He's got to start producing. He's got to come out and get a fight, because come on. I mean, there is a lot of BMF talk when you talk about the Diaz brothers, but you can't have a guy like Tony Ferguson come out and call you out like that. And this has happened too many times. Too many guys get out there and call him names and say, and tell him just shut up and fight. But he's not doing it. So at some point, people are going to start to lose interest, because it's a lot of fun to talk about Michael Chandler, a new up-and-comer here in the 155 division. Charles Oliveira is bringing a new game. Like, you're going to get forgotten, bro. You got to get out there and fight.
Agreed. I don't know. I mean, first, I want first Habib, then who's fighting for the title, which means Dustin versus someone. Then I'm interested to see what the fallout is and who's left standing between McGregor, Diaz, Ferguson. First, I want Habib. Is he staying or not? Then Poirier. Poirier versus someone. Poirier's locked in. And then that someone that doesn't get picked, either Oliveira or Chandler, they get somebody. And then, you know, all right, what do we got with the BMF? Yeah, run it. What's he doing? Sounds good to me. How about him? Okay, yeah, that makes – you know what I mean? All that, but first let's sort out the top. You can't have a marquee division like that with a champ, which has told us he's done, and an organization that still hasn't abdicated the throne or removed him from the throne. What's taken so long? They've had two of those matchmaker meetings since they've been back. All right. You had the first week off. It was a good run. You were only there for 8 days. It wasn't like the one where they were there for 5 weeks and had like, or 4 weeks and had five shows. That was a run. This was an 8-day run. Dana, you know, in first class. You and the matchmaker sit down and figure it out. You've already had your private meetings.
I have a theory. I think they have figured it out. And you know when I think that announcement's going to happen? Right along the time Bellator has their big announcement. Because the UFC likes to do that type of stuff.
Maybe. Mendez did an interview on Ablemos MMA, and he keeps bringing up that one name that says, I've heard it like from three different sources, GSP would bring him back. I think Ali said it. Javier Mendez has said it. I can't even remember if Habib has said it. But the UFC doesn't seem to be warm to that. Dude, if I'm Dana White, I'd say, okay, you got it for the 165-pound title. You two create it. You deserve it. Either Habib will be a champ, 30-0, then maybe he retires. Or GSP will be the historical champ. Three titles. I don't know. But some history will be made. It'll sell a lot of pay-per-views. GSP doesn't have to cut to 155 and look like a skeleton. Habib can gain a little bit, which he doesn't really need to, but he does suffer some rough weight cuts. And in the meantime, we'll get 55 going.
Dana's been so against it that I just don't see it. I don't understand why he has that disdain. Like, when somebody even brings it up, it bothers him. But so I don't see it happening, but it makes total sense.
What I can't understand is when someone says, hey, why don't you have 165, 175? And he says, do you know what it'll do? We'll have literally no talent. How are we supposed to run a division? Why doesn't that person say, oh, yeah? Well, look at your women's featherweight division. I mean, that's the simple counter, right? And I wouldn't even say it if he said, oh, man, why would we want to do that? Then we'd be in the same pickle we are now with the women's featherweight division. But he never says it. He always says it like, what are you thinking? How dare you ask that, right? And that's why the reporter needs to go, oh, yeah, well. And then, if you're going to act stupid, then I'm going to act stupid and say, you got the women's featherweight division. And even the men's flyweight division only functions goes with, if I had to guess, under contract, 25 guys, but really relevant, 10 to 12. The other ones are just either making their mark or we've heard of. How is it that Jake Hadley isn't even in the UFC? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. I don't even think it would really decimate divisions that bad. If you look at 170 and look at 155, there's a lot of talent.
I agree.
And they're just going to funnel down like that. So
it'd be a thing of beauty, man. It would be a thing of beauty. Kamaru Usman would more than likely choose to go to 175. In fact, that would be a second title for him. 70 just goes into the books. The UFC used to be 200 and up and 200 and down. Then it was 170 to 200 and 200 and up. It's not like the UFC hasn't moved things around. Then the UFC goes, let's create 205 for Tito Ortiz and got rid of 200. Mm-hmm. At one point they went, we can't have lightweights. Get rid of them. No 155ers, even though they had BJ Penn at the time. Well, maybe they didn't. He was off the K1 and doing some other stuff, but they had him at one point. At one point they were like, oh, the WEC's cute. Let them do their thing over there. Women's MMA, no, not for us. So they've looked at stuff before and made the wrong call and then came around and made the right call. This is the right call, 165 and 175. At one point, I used to champion 195. We had a lot of tweeners. I can name five right away. Franklin, Hendo, Vanderlei, Shogun, Babalu at the time. We're like 205, you could just tell they were getting smashed by the bigger guys. Not smashed, but, you could tell there was a difference. And then at 185 was just too much. I think Lyoto and Rashad, you could throw them guys in there too. They would have been 95ers. 85 really, really decimated them. But look what happened to Rockhold and Weidman when they went up to 205. It's just not a good idea. I don't know. But so 95, I haven't been as worried about as much lately. But I would really love for him to go 105 to 205. What's 105, George? That's the atom weight division. Some Invicta has it, and then a lot of leagues in Japan have the atom weight division, 105. It's official, though. It's an official division in the ABC weight classes. So I'd love to see 105 all the way to 205. And then from there, let them big boys just battle it out. I'm not even a big fan of 235 because it's not like the 265ers have really been that dominant. You know what I mean? Right now, Miocic is what, about a 245 guy?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah, if anything, I think it's been more of the other guys. Kane. Kane's more of them on the smaller side.
Kane was small. JDS, again, was a 240, 245 guy. Yeah, even when Verdum had his run, wasn't the biggest cat out there either. The winners for the 50,000 were Benil Dariush versus Carlos Fajeda, fight of the night. Performance of the night went to Volkov and Sanhagen. I don't think any of us have a problem with that. I do feel bad for Ode Osborne. I will give Dan Thomas props. Come on, man. Give it to the little guy. You know what I mean? They could use it. But the UFC's often said, we don't think about that when we do it. We just do it. I don't know. Ode Osborne was pretty legit. Pretty legit to me. How about 40 grand to Five Guys? Or just send Ode Osborne a check, I guess. I don't know. Zero attendance. They're still at the Apex. No fans. There was fans at the Super Bowl goes. They said like 20,000 or 8,000 first responders. The first scene that I saw was a lot of packed fans. I think it was for America the Beautiful. And I was like, get away from each other, you know? Then once the game started, they seemed to separate them by cardboard cutouts that people paid 100 each to be in there. And I think the fans were a little more separated. But they had some scenes where I was like, ah. That and the Super Bowl parties. Knock on wood, man. Hopefully we dodge a bullet there.
Yeah.
This weekend we got UFC 258. Goz and I are going to be hosting a watch-along on Sportscaster. Watch the fights along with us. Whether you order the pay-per-view or not, you can tune in, hang out in our chat room, hang out with some other hardcore fans. You can turn the volume down on them and listen to us, or vice versa. If you don't get the pay-per-view, what more do you want? It's like listening to the radio, because we're going to tell you exactly in real time what is happening. We'll be clowning around. We'll have some drinks, some food. It'll be a good time. Join us on Saturday, 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific. That's the official start time. We'll probably dip in a little early. 9 and 6 is probably where we'll dip in here on Sportscaster. Also, I was perusing Sportscaster yesterday. A lot of Super Bowl channels, a lot of kids having fun. You can do what we do by creating your own channel. Pick a sport, pick a team, pick a league, whatever. Just go out there and have fun. Write down a few notes, you know, and see if you got the chops to do something like this. Who knows? Maybe one day we can look back and go, this is what he did on Sportscaster, and now the guy or the gal has succeeded and is calling an NBA game. I would really love to see a story like that in about 10 or 15 years. I agree. All right, we're going to bounce on out of here. Look for us over at MMA Junkie, Spinning Backlick, Rankings Report, and plenty of interviews with a lot of the top fighters in mixed martial arts. You can go and check a lot of those out right now on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo. And, of course, on this channel, sportscaster.com/MMAJunkie. All the archive shows are there, us popping in every Monday and Thursday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, for a fun one-hour show talking mixed martial arts and other stuff. So you'll see a lot of our archive shows, all of our archive shows, and you can check out what a watch-along is like. I really, really want you guys to hang out with us on Saturday. Folks, we are out of here. Go out there and be a champion. Enjoy your Monday.